If I were a truly creative person following my muse, I wouldn't care what you think, right? That's why creative Hollywood types seem united in their loathing of the test screenings, focus groups, and audience surveys that always precede a big studio release. There was a time before those market predictors were there, forcing crowd-pleasing happy endings onto tragic movies. But as the cost of movie-making soared, so did the risks and the need for research-based reassurance. Enter Joseph Farrell, founder of the National Research Group in 1978. He died last week at the age of 76, and L.A. Times film writer Rebecca Keegan wrote about his impact on Tinseltown. Welcome to On the Media.
Hi.
So test screenings and market research certainly existed before Joseph Farrell.
That's right. I mean, Gone with the Wind in 1939 was seen by a test audience. So this isn't the first time in 1978 that research principles are applied to Hollywood. But what Joe Farrell did that was really kind of revolutionary was he codified it. And he brought the principles that were being used in politics and in other industries to Hollywood.
So how did he do that? Who was he?
He was an attorney. He was also a sculptor. He had gone to Harvard Law School, and he was working for the Harris Poll, which was a political polling agency. He was asked to open their West Coast office, and that's where he began to see a real unmet need in Hollywood for hard data about how films would perform and also about how trailers and posters were working.
Wow. A lawyer, a pollster, and an artist. Was he able to calm the artists in Hollywood down?
When you ask studio executives who work with Joe Farrell in the 80s and 90s, what they would tell you is that he had this sort of special knack for taking this hard data and translating it in a way that artistic personalities could understand.
Let's talk about a movie that features focus groups and test screenings, Robert Altman's The Player. In it, a screenwriter pitches an uncompromising feature with no stars and an ending where the main character is wrongly executed because that's the way life is, he said. Now, after some test screenings, he is cynically transformed.
The audience is going to love it.
You sold it out. I can't believe it. How could you let him sell you out? I mean, what about truth? What about the reality?
What about the way the old ending tested in Canoga Park? Everybody hated it. We reshot it, now everybody loves it. That's reality.
I just wonder whether or not the cynicism that Altman displays in this film reflects the attitude in Hollywood among auteurs towards these market predictors, focus groups, test screenings, and so forth.
Filmmakers from Altman's generation, I mean, he really was from the auteur era in the 1970s when this practice started to become more common, were really kind of disgusted by it. I mean, they thought their movie should reflect their voice and not the voice of some random people in a mall. I think it depends which filmmakers you ask. Some filmmakers I've talked to about focus groups include James Cameron, Judd Apatow, Mike Mitchell, who directed the new Alvin and the Chipmunks movie, and they have all talked about it as a tool that was useful to them. For instance, Judd Apatow uses test screenings very enthusiastically to find out what other people think is funny. Just because he and the writers and actors he works with are laughing, are other people laughing? Bridesmaids, which Judd Apatow produced,
a blockbuster,
the highest grossing movie in Judd Apatow's career. There's a key scene in Bridesmaids where the bridesmaids get a bout of food poisoning in a dress shop.
Oh, that is a truly memorably disgusting scene.
Yeah, it's really raunchy.
You got food poisoning from that restaurant, didn't you?
No, I had the same thing that she had, and I hope you're fine.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, no.
Why is this happening?
Nothing's happening. Oh, my God. You know, I don't really care which dress we get. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to get off this white carpet.
No, okay. No, not the bathroom.
It tested through the roof with audiences. There are many scenes and many jokes in that movie that they were debating. This one, because it tested so well, stayed in the movie.
So what did the director of Alvin and the Chipmunks get out of this process?
Well, he talked about the challenge of finding jokes that both an 8-year-old and a 40-year-old would find funny. And through test screening, they were able to see, do these two different groups of people laugh at the same things? When do they? What kind of jokes do you leave in?
So there's a big scene of the chipmunks with food poisoning?
There's not, but there is a pot joke in there, which parents may get on one level and kids will just think is entertaining because they'll see Theodore staggering around and being silly.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of some famous examples of test screenings that utterly transformed a film?
Probably the most famous example, and this is one that Ferrell worked on, is the movie Fatal Attraction. And spoiler alert, folks, but the test audiences did not like the original ending in which Glenn Close's character, she's not punished enough, was what the audiences felt. So the new ending led to her demise in a bit more dramatic way and was more satisfying for audiences.
Test screenings also had an impact on Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, if you ever wondered why did Molly Ringwald not end up with Ducky, and she ended up with
the John Cryer character,
John Cryer
that everybody
character.
Thought she should be with?
Yeah, although some people thought he was maybe not really into girls. And in fact, a number of years ago, Molly Ringwald herself said she thought that character might be gay.
You can't do this and respect yourself.
You know, you're talking like that just because I'm going out with Blaine.
Blaine? His name is Blaine? Oh, that's a major appliance. That's not a name.
Just because I'm going out with Blaine doesn't mean I can't be friends with you.
Molly Ringwald ends up going with the hot guy instead of the nerdy guy as a direct result of what test screening audiences
And it was a big
wanted.
Hit.
It was a big hit.
Certain niche films aren't intended to have mass market appeal. So when you do a test screening, do you pick people to watch it for whom the movie was intended?
Sometimes test screeners do that. They do select the right demographic, the age, the gender, nationality. There are some movies that are just not appropriate for a focus group process. For instance, there's this new movie out, Shame, which is rated NC-17. It's about sex addiction. It's got some award season buzz. It's just not a movie that a group of people in a room who you know nothing about besides their age and where they live are going to necessarily embrace. It's a hard movie to watch for many people. I think this process is used best when it's on these big, broad movies that are intended to be seen by wide audiences. And for these smaller art house movies that don't need to make that much money, it's probably not as useful.
Your opinion, Joseph Farrell, good for the art of movies or bad?
Good for the movie business? Not always perhaps good for movies.
Rebecca, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rebecca Keegan is a film writer for the LA Times and author of The Futurist, The Life and Films of James Cameron.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, Sara Abdurrahman, and Chris Neary, with more help from Lina Anwar and Hannah Sheehan, and edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Rob Granis.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And Brooke, here, our senior producer, Katya Rogers from England, writes, insert, happy Christmas message. No, no, Kat. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Happy holiday.
Go ahead. Mock me.
Support for On the Media comes from the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.